Feral Audio.
Oh, hi. It's time for another episode of Drew Drogie's Minor Revelations. Hi. I'm just enjoying saying hi right now. It feels great in my mouth. One of my favorite things about living in LA, and I've lived here for, over 17 years, I love going to free screenings. It's one of my favorite things. I mean, obviously, free, operative word, lovely, but and it's really great because you usually get to see a movie sometimes just like a week before it opens, and sometimes like months and months. And they do a lot of test screenings here to try to see how, something plays. And I remember when my mom came to visit, a million years ago, I took her to an advanced screening of Napoleon Dynamite, and she thought that was just amazing because she was, she was like, this isn't going to come out in theaters for like a year. And, I'm on a million mailing lists, and some of them are through the acting union, and some of them are just random people that I know. And I just stay on these lists to go and see these movies or TV shows or whatever, ahead of time. Plus, it makes me go see things that I probably wouldn't see, which I've talked about. I think I talked about last week, how cool that is to just go and sit down and watch something that I never would be interested in. And if it's terrible, you can leave and you've spent free on it. So go. But on top of all that, it's so fascinating the people who come to these screenings. Drew Drogie and the bizarre denizens of Los Angeles. And I'm just so fascinated by, but how these people like get anything together to put on pants and make it to the theater, because they are lunatics. It's a lot of like people who have, clearly been out here for a long time. I'm completely talking about myself, by the way. I'm this person. So get ready. But just like been out here for a really long time. There's this crazed anger. I don't know why a free anything makes people crazy. Like, you tell people like something's free, they will complain. They're upset. It's like, for a free movie, they always overbook it, because when people don't spend anything, they can always like flake at the last minute. So for a theater, they overbook, the reservations. And so they say, get there early. They always do that. You have to stand in line and wait until they let you in. And people like show up mad that they have to be in line. And they're just like, what is going on? And they're just like, they're always think there's some sort of conspiracy against them. You're getting a free movie. Relax. Or don't go. If you hate it so much, don't go. No one's making you do this. But they sit there, and there are also a lot of people that just panic, and they're just expecting the worst thing to be happening at all times. Like, the end of the world must be coming, because, we can't sit down and watch Carol, or whatever. And so I went, the other day to, a screening of a show, which one of my guests today, is, a member of. Have I ever been in anything or know how it works? He's a cast member on this show called I Love Dick. He guest starred on the pilots. So please watch it. It's so good. I'll talk about it in a minute. It's amazing. It's on Amazon. And by the time this podcast, this episode, drops, it'll already be, you'll be able to see all of them. But anyway, I went to go to this screening, and it was at a hotel, and, we got there, we got there early, and I got there a little bit early, and there were, maybe 25, 30 people there in line, in a big theater. So, we all were going to get in, and it was going to be fine. And they said, if you're in the guild, which is if you're in one of the the Screen Actors Guild or the Writers Guild, like, you stand in this special line because you get preferential treatment. And if you're not, there's another line over here. So I just only saw one line. So I was like, I'm going to go stand in the one line and everybody's going to get in. So it's not really going to matter. Well, that wasn't good enough for this couple that walked up behind me. The woman was screaming when we got there, where's the guild line? We need to stay under the guild line. We're members of the guild. As if, you know, she's a wizard or something. Like she's, you know, oh, you live in LA and you're in a guild? Oh my God, do you like pizza and friendship? Great, good for you. You're interesting. And so anyway, she's screaming and needing to let everyone at this hotel. And a lot of people are checking in. It's at a hotel. And like, they're not all, you know, in her world, believe it or not. Then, so she's really upset about that. And also it was like 30 minutes before the movie or before the show was screening, we all were going to get in, just relax. Then this other foursome, I guess two couples walk up, and this woman was talking about how excited she was to see the show. It's called I Love Dick, starring Jessica Hahn. And she's like, I love Jessica Hahn, and I'm so glad she's back. I can't wait to see her in this thing. You know, and I was like, oh, she means Katherine Hahn. And she's saying Jessica Hahn, who, if you guys know who that was, I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina in the 80s, so I know exactly who Jessica Hahn was. She was Jim Baker, the televangelist who had PTL. He was like, he had a huge affair with Jessica Hahn, who was his secretary. And she just looked like 80s lip gloss whore in the best possible way. And of course, she told all and spilled and, you know, brought the church down. And so, you know, whatever. And then she was in Penthouse and then went away. So it was like hilarious that this woman, you know, just is getting the name wrong. And she means Katherine Hahn. So while I'm having this thought, one of the guys that was with her in the group said, oh, you mean Katherine Hahn? And the woman said, no, Jessica Hahn. And they're like, no, Katherine Hahn is the actress. No, I know. This is Jessica Hahn. No, Jessica Hahn was the secretary to Jim Baker in the 80s. No, I know. And I can't, she's in this show, it's called I Love Dick. And she does. And I can't wait to see what this is about. So this woman actually thought that Jessica Hahn, 30 years later, was given her own show called I Love Dick, and we were going to be subjected to it as a people. Like, we were just going to have to experience that. So I can't imagine what it was like for her watching this. So it's just such a lovely time to reflect and to people watch when you're in these situations. I finally got let into the theater. I sit down. It was a big theater. There were a million seats. And I ended up filling up later because people came, but this one lady insisted on sitting right next to me, and she had this crazy reason why she needed to sit right there, and she had bags with her. It looked like she had like a large Shasta and some meringues. She was ready to camp out and watch two episodes of a 30-minute TV show and, you know, spend her Saturday there. Anyway, despite all of that, the show is wonderful. It's so smart. I'm going to talk about it a lot when Pat is on the show, so I'll save all of that, but do check out I Love Dick and never turn out an opportunity to go to a free screening. Just begin. I'm sitting here with the delightful and wonderful Tom DeTrenis and Pat Town.
Hello,
gents.
Hi.
How are y'all?
Good.
Wonderful.
A little tired.
Oh, my God. It's great. You're a little tired?
Yeah. Yeah. I was moving furniture all last night for the carpet cleaners who came in today, who had cleaning a carpet that hadn't been cleaned in over 10 years.
Oh, no. Whoa. I get it. Yeah. I totally get it. Now, this is at your home.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, it's funny. I see a lot of black water when it comes out. Oh, my God. I say, wow, this carpet hasn't been cleaned in a while.
Yeah, I know, man.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, so on top of that, you have to deal with the like embarrassment of, I'm embarrassed constantly when anyone comes into my place because I'm like, I know, I get it. It's messy and I haven't straightened things and I haven't hung a picture and I need to paint the walls and I'm a constant wreck.
I went to your house one time and you were like very nervous about me going there.
Yeah, I'm nervous about everybody going over there.
You were like, Tom, it's just this, there's things all over and just... And I was like, it's fine.
Totally it's fine, totally Drew. Fine. Relax.
No, I'm okay with that. My wife, though, she doesn't. Spencer's girlfriend came over, my son's girlfriend came over last night, and I said, yeah, you're lucky your mom isn't here because she would not have allowed it because there's just junk in the living room because we had to move it out for the carpet cleaner.
Oh, I see.
Oh.
But your wife, is she a neat freak?
Not a neat freak, but she does like things to look nice if people come over.
Oh, I get that. That's how my parents are growing up, and we always had to straighten up. We also moved a lot growing up, and so we always had to have our house like on display. My father was a crazy neat freak. I mean, he was like, my mom had to teach him to like leave a magazine out. Like, because that was my mom always said when they started dating that my dad was he was just all about it.
The realtor's coming over, honey.
leave a magazine out.
Leave Better Home and Garden out. There.
My dad, his first business was carpet cleaning. He used to go into restaurants and bars and clubs in New York City and clean the carpets to pay his way through chiropractic school.
Oh my God, I love that.
So he would always clean our house carpets like two times a year. So our carpets were always pristine.
And your father, your father's an amazing chiropractor.
Yes.
He and your mom came and saw
Bright Colors.
Yeah, my show. Like, how many times did they come?
Three times. In
2 weeks in New York, they came and saw the show.
Oh, that's
and
sweet.
I threw out my back really badly one night in the middle of this montage when I'm supposed to be like throwing myself around and drinking and going crazy. And I the second half of the show, I was like, I'm having trouble breathing. This is really hard. And it happened to be a night that Tom's dad was there, and he did an adjustment on me downstairs in the theater, just immediately, like, here, boom. And I was better. I was fine. Bing.
If you catch something like that, you catch, like, right away uh-huh. in that day or the next day, and you're going to be like, oh, it's a little sore, but it's not like I am immobile.
Right. Well, that's the problem is I think you think when you do something, you're like, it'll go away. Uh-huh. It'll work itself out, and it just gets worse.
You know, like when you, like, sleep weird, and then you get that weird stiff neck, and you're like, oh, yep. That's going to hurt. And then, right. like, a day or so later, you're like, I can only go forward in my car.
Right,
I cannot go backwards.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I try to work all those things. It's very hard. But to go back to your wife, Pat.
Hi.
Oh, hi. I don't know if I told you in person. I saw you and loved you in I Love Dick.
Oh, thank
it's
you.
It's so good. It's thank so great. You. And by the time this airs, it'll be everybody will be talking about it. But
oh,
it's
excellent.
A new show. That you and your wife both worked on, and it's on Amazon.
Yeah. Amazon Prime drops May the 12th. May 12th. And my wife is a consulting producer on it, and I just had a little bit in the pilot.
And you're so funny in it.
Oh,
it's so
thanks,
great.
Sweetie.
It's so the longer I get away from it, the more I think about it, and the more I like it.
I am telling you, I love the show. We binge watched it all in one sitting.
Oh, cool.
And I'm really taken with not only just the show by itself, but also just knowing Jill Soloway, who created it, and Transparent. Just seeing the way she's attempting to do something, make a new language out of the use of film, and even what a
yes.
comedy show is. You know what I mean?
Yes,
it's
absolutely.
Palpable.
Well, and it's challenging in a way that you don't even have dialogue for because
yeah.
you're like you're watching. I mean, I've only watched the first two episodes. Mm. I went to a screening of it, which I talked about in my intro. But I they showed the first two, mm-hmm. and. It's so feminist, but it's about this obsession with this man,
this guy, with this
and about
macho
like,
guy.
And it's so it's I love is a Catherine Hahn who is you know a gift to
a
us
dream.
All,
a fucking dream.
I mean, she's so great, and she's you know this filmmaker, and she's arrogant, and she's from mm-hmm. New York, and she's just you know and
crazy
her,
lady,
and yeah, and her. Husband Griffin Dunn mm-hmm. it gets a grant or he gets like a fellowship.
A fellowship at this place where Dick is
right.
works.
In Marfa, Texas. And so like she's just going down to drop him off before she goes to Venice because her film's in the Venice Film Festival and she's, you know, a little bit looking down her nose and in a very real way. And then mm-hmm. I'm not gonna give away, but basically it's about this obsession with Kevin Bacon who plays Dick, who is the worst mm-hmm. you know, embodiment of male aggression, and he's just this shitty guy. But you get it. You're like,
oh,
you're,
yeah.
everyone's obsessed with him, and men are obsessed with him, and women, and what it awakens in them, and just that. But also that weird connect between like, I'm a feminist in my head. You know, I mm-hmm. have all these, these lofty ideas, and this, I want to change the world. I want to say something as a woman,
and yet. Here I am.
And yet I'm a slave
so
to this man.
Turned on by that man.
Right.
It was funny when you'll see it in the pilot. There's a shot when you first see Kevin when he's rolling a cigarette,
uh-huh.
and he looks up at Catherine Hahn's character, and when they were shooting it, because that was in Marfa, and they were shooting it around the Video Village, you could hear all the people when Kevin's eyes looked up to the camera. Everybody went, "Ooh, man." This collective moan around Video Village.
God. Oh, that's so fun.
Oh, and we happened the same thing for me. You know, so there's just a few of us in the cast. You know, it's Catherine and me and Griffin and Brett's there too, and Jill and the couple of the people, the kids, the students. I'm sorry, I don't know their names, mm-hmm. but anyway.
So that red-haired girl is so good.
India, too. Yes, she's gorgeous.
Fantastic, yeah.
So we're standing around in a circle, and Jill likes to have people connect, you know, before we start the workday. So looking around, just can make connection with just look each other in the eye, look each other in the eye, and I'm looking, I'm saying hi, there you are, hi, nice to meet you, and oh my God, Kevin Bacon has the most gorgeous eyes I've ever seen.
That is so crazy.
I mean, I was stunned. It was like one of those things, like whoa,
wow, you know, yeah,
you kind of get hit with it. You
know? Well, and also like. I've seen him out a lot and in life, and he doesn't necessarily exude that, but
right.
he's just, he has that energy as an actor, and he knows how to
turn it on.
Yeah. Because like, I mean, I get it, but it's also like, what I also love about it is like, you wouldn't read this and think, you know who's like the sexiest guy alive? Kevin, you're like, he's a really good looking guy, yeah. and he's a great actor, and he's always solid, but he's just a really good actor to make you do that. And that sort of like almost like Clark Gable, Gone with the Wind,
yes.
looking at Scarlett moment where you're like, oh, wow, that is everything in a look.
Oh, my God.
And to know that like you have to, that's what the show hinges on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a show, too, that I have to say that like I enjoyed the second episode even more than the pilot. And I feel like it's going to keep going that way, but it's as you're watching it, you're not really sure what you're watching until you think about it afterwards. Because I was going, I really liked it. What is it? And then the next day I was like, oh no, I loved it.
Yeah,
and then
I can't wait.
The more you think about it, you're like, oh gosh, that's what this is about. Oh, that's so smart. Mm-hmm. Like it is challenging in that way. It's not like a, you know, like, oh, it's so hard to follow. It's very easy to follow, but emotionally, it really rides a line of like, oh, how boy. Do I feel and what, and I'm sure it's only going to get crazier.
Yeah.
And
you know, it's funny, like that the Catherine's character, I think she's not all that likable at first, and then as she's going into what she goes into, I think, I don't know if she becomes any more likable, but you certainly sympathize with uh-huh. what she's going through.
Oh, absolutely.
And the torture that's going on in her head, you know?
I think she does that really well.
In every role she has,
from like Afternoon Delight to like even that stupid
greatest.
Movie where she played just a best friend and it was like fucking like 13 going on 30 or some shit. Even in that, you're like,
I wrote that
the
movie,
things
Tom.
You did. Oh.
Yeah, I did.
Well,
but
I really
keep talking.
You know what? I fucking hated it. Even when she's doing those smaller roles like a while ago before she's gotten so mm-hmm. so incredibly well known now, mm-hmm. There was always a special quality about her where you love every character no matter how crazy or how unrelatable. Yeah. You're always just like, I just really get that woman. Mm-hmm.
I saw her, the first thing I ever saw her in that I think where I know it was Step Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
And she's Adam Scott's wife. And she's so incredible. And I was like, who is that woman? Who is that woman? And then I saw her in Revolutionary Road, you know, with a Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet movie. And
oh my God, who was she in that?
She's the friend. She's married to, it's the other, the couple across the way. Who's the other? Oh my God, I'm terrible.
Was Michael Shannon in that?
He is in it. And he's amazing. But it's not Michael Shannon. It's someone else.
Oh my God, I forgot. But
another couple across the way.
I forgot that they were there and that she was in that movie.
Yeah. And she's so great in it. And she just like melts into everything she does.
Yes.
And then, you know, but in Transparent, it's that same thing with that character. You go back and forth with her. You're like, I love her. Oh, she's such a stick in the mud. Mm. Oh, I love that she's cussing now. Oh, she's going through a lot. Oh, the tension. She's really unpredictable. And yeah, and you don't always like love her and, you know, the character she plays. And she's not afraid of that. And that's always, to me, I love someone who's like willing to be ugly emotionally.
This I think this is the best thing. Certainly the best thing I've ever seen her in. I haven't seen a lot of her stuff, but it when you see the whole, especially the whole run of the show, if you binge like I did, but
She's just fantastic at this. I'm sure she's going to get nominated for an Emmy.
I sure hope so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so great.
Because
yeah.
even in Transparent, I thought that was the best work she'd ever done. Because she was just on the side, really. Mm-hmm. She wasn't like a main character mm-hmm. in the beginning of it. She was just like, oh, the rabbi here. Mm-hmm. And then she got bigger and bigger in this last season. She just, like, that journey she went on, I was mm-hmm. like, yeah. I get it, girl. Yeah. But yes. also, like, calm down.
Right.
But also, I get it.
Right. All of it. And, you know, it's,
but I thought it was a great expression, actually, for the audience as a frustration with Josh and what he's going through and what he's doing. And she's
on
trying
Transparent.
To, on Transparent. Trying to understand the stuff that she goes through is the stuff that I feel myself going through with that character sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's why.
Well, and that's show. I feel like that with so many of those characters. I'm like, I've been that. I've hated that.
Yep.
I want to be that all at once. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm experiencing all of this way too loudly right now. It's just, it's delicious.
Yeah.
It's so great. Oh, television.
Television. Speaking of television, have you seen The Handmaid's Tale yet? Did you watch it?
No,
I
don't have the Hulu. Oh. I thought about doing the Hulu just for that.
Can I tell you should, because it's just $6 or $7 a month. It's actually very inexpensive.
Yeah.
Tom's last name is Hulu.
Well, my last name is Rich. Okay, $6 or $7. Hey. So excuse you.
Hulu, Handmaid's Tale.
Fucking...
I know. I can't bring myself to watch it, and I know it's going to be
for
great.
For me,
but...
I'm like, I'm binging that show like crazy, because I'm just like, yeah. But my my boyfriend, he's like, I can't. He watched one episode. He's like, I have to take a break. I have to be in the mood to watch this.
Yeah, I know.
I have another friend.
I feel like the same way, because I'm sure it's impeccable, but it's just, it looks...
It is heavy and terrifying. A little too close to home.
I know. Yeah, Brett has the book, too. My wife has the book, Margaret Atwood's book. And uh-huh. She's like, oh, yeah, it's about time they did this, you know?
Right.
And but now that it is happening at this time is just a little scary.
Yeah. It's, you know, but thank God it's mm-hmm. happening. I mean, people are seeing it. I mean, as scary as it is, it's like people need to know that this is, this can easily be a real thing.
I'm going
to
do the free month and then binge.
Yeah, wait until then. It's only on episode 5. I think there's 10 episodes, so wait a few more weeks.
Oh, right. They were dribbling it out.
They dribble it out. Like, do one a week?
Yeah, they did. There was two available, I think, and it is now one a week, and they're up to episode 5.
So by the time this goes up, the whole season might be, because it's only a couple weeks.
Okay.
So what do you think about that paradigm? Because I thought that was interesting. Now, you know, because the whole thing has been like, here's your whole season, here you go, kids. Mm-hmm. But now Hulu's doing this thing, let's dribble it out like we did in the old days, just like at a week at a time, and see if that works on a streaming system as well as the network stuff.
I think we're just their guinea pigs, really.
Yeah, well, there you go.
And they're just like, you know what? We're just going to try this now and take all the data and find out what actually works better and what gives us the most money.
Yeah, well,
and then that's what everyone's going to start adapting, because we're still, I think, with a lot of these streaming services, I think we're still kind of
I go back and forth on it. I like having it all in front of me when I can watch it whenever I want to, but it also is overwhelming.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And with Netflix having so many things constantly, and you're like getting new shows, and like May is like a huge month where all these things are dropping. You know, you do wonder if things get lost if they're not immediately being talked about. Like, you know, I mean, Handmaid's Tale is everyone's talking about it right now, and it's obviously doing very well. But then there might be some other great show that like needs to be more of a sleeper or you know, does need to string people on a little bit more, where you're like, oh, we all want to be talking about the same episode for a while before we can get to the next one. So
They should have done that with that Girl Boss show, because I watched like 2 or 3 episodes of it and I hated the ever living shit out of it. And I think I would have probably been able to digest it better if it was one at a time, because talk about an unlikable main character and a female. I think we spoke about this.
I haven't watched it. I can't. But I do know that's sort of the new thing, is having an anti-hero, which I love.
Yeah,
I love it, and I'm way more interested in that than like a perfect person that are leading through. But you really got to know what you're doing, and you really got to know, and you do run the risk of making someone who's just completely
garbage.
Garbage.
Well, that's the thing. If they're a horrible person, but they're going... Well, that's like Catherine character on The Thing. She's not necessarily likable, but you get what she's going through, and you sympathize for what... Right. So if you don't have that story, if you don't have that journey that character takes, then... of course we've seen hateful characters just for the sake of being hateful, and you know, who wants to deal with that?
Yeah.
I know. And there's certain things. I mean, you know, I always go back to like, I love young adult Charlize Theron. And I'm like, that character is fascinating.
Yeah.
And she's a horrible person.
Horrible person.
And learns the wrong lesson. At the end of the movie, she learns the complete wrong lesson. And she thinks she's really evolved and grown. And you're like, oh, fuck, this woman needs to be, you know.
Yeah.
But there's so much context around it. And there's so many other people around her that are so likable and functional.
Yeah.
That, and you see
Patton
with
really
her parents.
Really creates that,
yeah,
that energy,
yeah,
of like, oh, you're going to make us like her more because of this relationship.
Right, right, exactly. And understand her. And you meet her parents and you're like, oh, she's been kind of given too much attention. She was made too popular in school. She's really kind of not about anything. She knows that in her heart, that she doesn't have a lot to get, you know, and all that stuff. But she still feels entitled because she's popular. She was popular. And, you know, she looks down on these people in the small town who are really great, smart,
right,
and happy, mm-hmm, you know. And, yeah, it's, you know. Anyway.
Oh, look at us. Just
look
like dissecting.
Just
dissecting stories.
Television.
Yeah.
The drug, you know, of the nation.
Just really being, you know, philosophers and research.
Well, here you go. Let's philosophize more about TV. One thing I'm old and still connected to the cable box, you know, because I think that once you pull that cord and you just start getting the things in, you become disconnected from the local channels, from the local access channels, from the weird sports channels from around the world. You know, it does, I think, do one more step in separating you from having to interact with ideas and people and culture that you wouldn't necessarily, if you get to choose exactly what you want when you want it.
Yeah, yeah, it is interesting that we create, and we do that on Facebook, you know, the bubbles that we get in, and it's like all you just are with people that think the same way you do. And it is crazy. We were actually just talking about this. We recorded two episodes today, you guys.
Get out!
Ooh. Yeah. So we just did last week. So we were talking about this in last week's episode, quote unquote, the one we just did a few hours ago. Mm-hmm. You know, about community, about like just actually not going out, just the importance of going outside and meeting your neighbors and talking to people around you and seeing other things. And, you know, I really enjoy, I don't have a TV. So it's just from a, there's no real reason for it. I'm not proud of that fact. I'm not embarrassed by that fact. There's no, other than like, I watch a lot of stuff on my laptop. I'm rarely at home. I don't think I would know how to work a smart TV. There's also that. I don't think I would know how to turn it on. because when I've been in like, you know, hotels and Airbnbs, I'm like, I don't know how the TV works. I'm just going to, you know, stare at art in the house.
Why did they do that? Why did they make those remotes and shit so complicated?
I don't know.
It doesn't matter when we were younger or even now, because when I was younger, it still was just as involved. Like you have to press auxiliary, press one.
No, and it's like,
why do they do that?
A real smart TV needs to be smart and know that. Because what they figured out with computers is that computers are so easy to figure out.
Yeah.
Phones are so easy. That's what with iPhone. And people are like, I don't know how to. I'm like, you think you don't know? But I handed my iPhone to my 87-year-old grandmother last year, and she swiped. She looked at it and swiped. Somehow she knew, oh, I do this.
Yeah.
And it was like, that's the genius. That's really,
that's the genius.
It's really smart because they know, like anybody can pick this up. A kid can pick it up. But TVs are nowhere near there. And I look at them and I'm like, it just seems really complicated. And I don't know that I would get much out of it. But I was just gonna say that I'm a weirdo. I like to go to the movies and I go and I seek out like weird stuff that I can go and see. And I'm a big believer in going out and, you know, and seeing that stuff. But I also love a film festival, to your point, Pat, but because I love when I have a free pass at a film festival, I go see everything. When there's a space, I'm at 11 a.m. some, you know, a documentary about, you know, women in Chernobyl that are, you know, the babushkas of Chernobyl, which is actually amazing. It's an amazing documentary. And I think it is called The Babushkas of Chernobyl.
That is such a wonderful word.
About these women who have lived there. And they had to sneak back on because it's illegal because it's nuclear. Yeah, and they're radioactive as shit. These women buzz. They make crazy buzzing noises.
What?
Because they're just in the middle of all. And they're in their 80s and they live off of berries and they get drunk on beet wine. wine that they make, and they're amazing.
Oh my God, it's amazing. They should test them. It's like a, what's her name, Henrietta.
Henrietta Lacks.
Oh, right.
To test them for what's keeping you alive all these years around that radiation.
Because they say in this documentary, like, if you and I went there, we would be dead in no time because we couldn't handle it. But they have built up an immunity to it. It's where they're from. Many of the women who were moved to Ukraine. Uh-huh. After that, had horrible cancer because they had to move to a city, and they had to just and it was a horrible health problems for a lot of the people. And it's just fascinating because a lot of the men are dead. It's all women that are there, it's nuts. And they live in this crazy radioactive site, but it's beautiful. And there's no other people there. And they travel across. They'll take a day trip to go see each other. And then they just get drunk on wine that they've made, and they play games and they sing together. And you're like, this is. Anyway, I would never go and see that. Like, if I was scrolling through on Netflix and I was like, the babushkas of Chernobyl, no thanks. No. I'll skip.
Yeah.
And excuse
He's
me.
Dying.
I'm dying.
He's got the radiation.
I've got it in me. Oh, not long. But I'm just saying, I learn, you know, when I do go and see things that I wouldn't normally see, like, I'm like, it's nice. It feels like, oh, I learned something about a world and a, you know, so I definitely recommend people have some variety and not just think, oh, would I like this? Would I be into this?
Yeah.
The thing too is you have all this at your fingertips. You can always turn it off if it's not good.
That's
you don't
true.
Like
yeah.
it. But I don't know.
Well, turn there's it also on. Something very fun about scrolling through channels now because you don't really do that as much anymore. So right. like when I'm home and I'm just scrolling, I'm like, oh, this movie's on. Oh, this, because like when would you watch? Like A Fish Called Wanda, really. Just like
you should watch it always.
Yeah, look it up.
Movie.
Yeah,
you know, and there's just like random movies that like the Hallmark Channel is playing, or like Lifetime 4.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I know. What are these?
Or old episodes of The Big Valley or something on.
Yeah,
on some
I know. Land. I know. It's just like this. Just the amount of. Yeah. I was looking that we were. I was at a bar yesterday in the middle of the day because I'm doing
what?
Very well. I'm doing very well.
Oh, congratulations!
And they were playing a Joan Crawford movie. And we were trying to figure out what it was, and we figured out it was Lost Cargo from 1940 with her and Clark Gable.
Yeah, I know from Lost Cargo.
But we were like, this is crazy. And I was just looking up Joan Crawford film titles on IMDb.
Yeah.
She's done so many movies that have the craziest titles that you're like, that's not a real movie.
Right.
There is one that I have seen and I love it and it's absolutely crazy, but it's called Female on the Beach.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, that's what they called it. Female on the beach.
Hello, boys. What you looking at? What
female
am I?
On
the only
beach.
female on the beach.
It sounds like it'd be a lot more fun than it is. It's actually very drab and depressing, and she plays like a really sad alcoholic woman. And
so it's just
hot,
an autobiography.
She basically just
hey,
showed
Johnny,
up.
Who's that lady?
Well, that's the female.
That's the female.
The female
but
on the
not
beach.
Even lady on the beach or woman.
No,
woman on the
female.
Sand.
Woman on the sand.
I mean, woman on the sand, doesn't that sound more like
a much more romantic, yeah.
But like female on the beach, like that'll count. She's got so many titles. If you go on IMDb and look at Joan Crawford movies, you're like, this was a movie?
Well, did she do The Frogs? Is The Frogs one or something like that? Like
she
a
Trog.
Trog.
Trog was her last film.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That's right.
But she's, you know, but it's just crazy to think like there is so much out there. There's so many movies. Mm-hmm. There's so many TV shows. Like there's just, we've been... I mean, think about in another 100 years, all the crap we're going to have.
And I wonder what will shine through, like in this era, in the early 2000s to now, what out of these few years is actually going to be seen in 50 or so years?
Well, because everything's so splintered.
What are they going to show on Turner Movie Classics in 50 years from now?
That's the thing. I mean, that was... You know, it's crazy though. Like the longer we go, like everything is splintered off, and people aren't watching things. And if a million people watch something, that's huge now. Where it used to be like a huge failure, only a million people saw it. That's a bomb. And now, like, it's just because everyone is, and kids are all listening to different music and then watching different shows. No one's into the same. You know, we're growing up, no matter what, you know, you watch the same shows on TV.
Yeah.
Thursday nights at 8 was The Cosby Show.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's what you watched. You know, like, it wasn't like there was any, everybody knew what you're referencing, you know.
And then the next day, that's what everyone would talk about.
Right, exactly.
Because that's all that was around for you to kind of consume.
Yeah. Oh, life. Anyway, I want to talk to you guys personally.
Oh, what did I do?
It's a lot. Personally? Tom, I'm going to need to talk to you, but Pat can be here and listen because I'm sure he has some notes as well.
I love notes.
No, I just want to hear from you guys. Like, who wants to go first? Do you have a story or opinion or a revelation or...
Go ahead, Pat. Take it away. Take
revelations.
Us away.
Yeah. No, I'm boring in real life, so...
You're not boring in real life.
You know what? I actually had a thought, and because I wondered what you had thought about this. One of the lessons I've had to learn coming here into Hollywood is that... comedians are afraid of acting and actors are afraid of comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know that paradigm that I'm talking about?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, because comedians think, oh, it's all about emotions. And the last thing that comedians want to do is express themselves emotionally.
Right.
And then actors think they know what's funny. So they, you know, they be funny. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I feel like the three of us straddle that line and are, I mean, I feel a tension between both sides of me because I think I have both sides. I think all three of us actually have both of that in us. Mm-hmm. You guys, we were all just in a play together. I mean, everyone listens to the show. I'm like, when is he going to stop bringing on his Die Mommy Die cast? This officially.
This will round it out. This is the rounding out.
I've had a lot of Die Mommy Dyke kids on the. No, I don't want to say officially. There are quite a few people.
Well, there are 20 people in the cast.
20 people in the cast, and you'll hear more stories about this play that you didn't see unless you were in LA in, you know, March of.
But I hear it's going to New York. Is that right?
Sure. Isn't it always? Isn't everything?
Every play goes to New York.
Well, when it's a play, it goes to New York. That's how it works.
Yeah.
No, but I just think it's such an interesting conundrum because for me in college, I was an actor and I wanted to act. And there was a comedy troupe I didn't get cast in the comedy troupe. So I would have been in the comedy troupe had they put me in.
Right.
But freshman
year. Where are they now?
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Where are they?
They are all in gutters. They are all losing.
Good.
They're all good. Fat.
They're doing shows from themselves. Uh-huh.
They're uh-huh. They're sobbing. All of them, everywhere.
But you were not there.
But I was. You know, and I remember taking a lot of acting classes in college and stuff, and I would get laughed at because I was too over the top, and I was the more I tried to act, and I hated the funny part of me because I never thought that was legit. And I was like, I know I make people laugh and whatever, but I want to be treated seriously as an actor.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where everything came from. And then I realized like, oh, in order to be good at comedy, you've got to play it like it's absolutely real and it's all happening for you.
There you go.
So I was like, oh, that's actually what can make me, you know, funny is I have to just believe everything I'm saying and mean it. And I have that, you know, weird comedy spin on it or whatever that is. But I also think like, you know, when you work with people who are just consider themselves comedians, they don't respect actors and they don't think, or like you said, they're scared of it.
A little scared of it. I think it's
fear on both sides where it's like, you know, people who, the hardest thing is to try to compete with comedy and going, oh, I know what's funny. I can do this. And it's a thing where it's like, no, there's actually like something to learn from it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think anybody can learn how to, I would say this, anybody can learn how to improvise. And I do believe that. And anybody can learn how to act. Funny is a weirder thing to sort of navigate because it's different for everybody. And it's subjective. I mean, there are working comedians that I don't think are funny at all.
Yeah.
And the world would disagree with me. You know, I mean, they have huge careers and I'm like, they don't make me laugh.
And there are people in the theater doing musical comedies that I think are boring and tedious as hell.
But they
thrill millions across the country.
Absolutely.
You know.
And, you know, and I do think it's hard in like when working in the sketch comedy improv world and a lot of musical theater people come in and it's like what they do well, it's like, oh my God, they take the stage. They perform the hell out of it.
Right.
They know how you hand them a script. They can deliver. They're hilarious. But sometimes they don't always come in with the most original characters because they do stock. Because they're used to doing stock. And it's not their fault. It's just what they're used to doing. And they go, a rich man walks in the room counting his coins and adjusting his monocle.
Look at me,
the other thing, sometimes musical theater actors, too, the problem with them is they get very stiff. It's like, oh, I'm going to do it this way. We've rehearsed it this way and I will always do it this way.
Yes.
So it's very hard for them sometimes to do any
sort
kind of improvised.
They're a prisoner of their training. It's like they've learned how to do this thing really well and it protects them and it makes them able to do it 8 times a week because they know how to show up and do boom.
Like robots.
I'm going to do this thing. But in the world of, you know, when we're trying to, you know, the Groundlings were always like, you need to show who you are. Who, right. What is your, and you got to be messy. You've got to, you know, dare to go up. I mean, I just saw a show with the Groundlings, and this woman was playing this drunk at a bar, and she had a line, and she flubbed it so badly, but just owned it and just kind of said, fuck it, and continued to drink. And it was the highlight of the show.
Right,
because
right.
I was like, that's exactly what that woman would do.
Right.
She was supposed to say some really interesting point, but she just got so messed up in the middle of it, and she just started drinking. And it was like, yeah. And that's the stuff that we love. That's a happy accident. In the comedy world, we go, yes, that. But in musical, but in theater, they might go, oh, you went up on your line.
You don't improvise so much.
You beat yourself. Even like legit theater actors too. Like some legit theater actors are not as, like once the show is set, they're like, I'm set.
Right.
This is happening.
Right.
And it's not as like flexible.
And we had to go through that in our play because we were sort of in both worlds in the play that we were in.
Yeah.
It was we had to be alive, and we were so campy, and we were so big. And the greatest compliment I got from the show was how all of us were so big and so committed in the world that we were in. Like, a lot of people were like, everybody is so in this crazy world, but we were in a tiny theater.
Tiny.
Screaming, camping
at each other. Screaming at each other.
My voice is finally recovered.
I know that many times during the week, I'm like, I can't have lunch today.
I'm sorry, do people know the name of the show? It was Die, Mommy, Die.
Oh, yeah, it was a show Drew did here.
Soon to be
Los
seen
Angeles.
In New York City.
Very, very impressive piece of theater. The ephemeral theater that no one will get.
Along them lines, This is what I've found too, because my training was kind of similar in that I went to graduate school for Shakespeare, you know, and I did the summer stock Shakespeare stuff. In fact, I'm going this summer to do some Shakespeare.
I love that you do that.
Oh, where?
In Wyoming, Jackson Hole.
How fun. Yeah. How fun is that?
You're up here in Jackson Hole.
Yeah.
Jackson Hole is
beautiful.
What I just
Jackson
said.
Hole.
Yeah, I heard that.
You're in Jackson
Hole. Jackson Hole. Wasn't he in Hawaii 5-0 back in the
70s? I think so.
But yes, the Shakespeare. Oh, yes. After I got done with graduate school, I moved to Chicago and was one of the founders of the Annoyance Theater, which is so anti any kind of structure. Mick's thing was get up there and do something. No, that's boring. Do something, you know.
And I love it.
And that was I went from the training of the do the words right, and that's just as they're written, to do whatever the hell you want. Get up there and dance, monkey boy.
Oh, yeah.
But the merging of both of those things is a great thing that I wish both schools could learn from each other.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And because if you don't have any structure and you're just starting from a place of chaos or just like, whatever, that's impossible to maintain. And working with people like that who are pure instinct, who are not, you know, there are definitely people I'm like, you know, I've said there's certain people I'm like, you're pure talent. But you have zero training and zero trust.
Yes.
You know, and it's trust, like, that's very hard because you know, and then it's like, you got to be able to balance all that. And that's why it's really tricky to do. But it's like, yes, I totally agree that you have to have some guidelines. And it is something that when we teach improv, like there's so many rules in improv because you have to learn them. And then eventually you get up on stage and you break them.
Yeah, right.
You know, and then there are always students that come to improv shows and they go, wow, you guys broke a lot of rules. And it's like,
because we know the rules.
And we know how to, you know, and it's boring for us just to play the rules.
Yeah.
You don't want to spend money and go watch people just play by the rules. That's not interesting. That's ever.
I did that in Morro Bay just a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, played by the rules?
Yeah. We went to this, we were traveling up to San Francisco for a spring break to kids. They'd never been. We went to the Tonga Room on your recommendation,
Tom. Thank you very much.
So we stopped on Morro Bay on the way, and we were eating at this place at this, you know, in by the dock, and some kids came down. Kids, you know, some actually they weren't that young. There were some 30s and 40s, and said, "Hey, just want to let you know, at 7 o'clock we're doing a little improv upstairs. So if you want to
stop,
God,
you stop.
In Morro Bay, California.
I didn't know this at all. Oh my God! So did you join them?
What was the name of their group?
No. Oh,
what was the name of their group?
I don't know. I think it was.
You just watched it.
We watched
it
because we, you know, I had the kids with me, and I didn't want to, you know, dance. And I was going. I said, if they come near me, I will mop the floor with them, acting wise, joke wise. But anyway, but it was. Okay, we're going to, this is our group, and we meet on Wednesday nights. We're going to do, this first game is called Radio Play, and they would do improv games for the audience.
How many people were in the audience?
How big was this? It was like the top room of this restaurant, so big enough to hold 50 people, maybe 20 were there, which I thought was quite a big number, actually, for a Wednesday night.
I love that so much.
I love that they
I want
that.
To go around the nation just finding that
finding those people. I know, and it was also that you kind of broke your heart in a way, and Brett and I are just sitting there, you know, just kind of rolling, trying not to laugh too hard at them, is the tepid applause after the game that the teacher has to lead, you know?
That's how we solved that problem. Well, I was just talking about this to a group of friends the other day about this place in Westwood, this bar. The club was called the Westwood Brewing Company. It's not there anymore, but it was upstairs of this bar, and we used to go do improv there every Monday night. Every Monday night, I would go from Los Feliz, which is East Hollywood, everybody. It's a little over an hour to get down to Westwood.
Westwood is a bitch.
And it's, you know, and go all the way across and do Monday nights. We would do improv at like 8:30 or something. And people, after they finished their steak, they could wander upstairs. And if we had 20 people, we were doing great. You know, and there was one time that like our friend Anna was in the show with us, and her grandparents, who were from, they are from somewhere in Eastern Europe. They were the only people in the audience.
What?
And so they were the only
audience.
Understand
what you were
And so we were like, we need a celebrity. Can you give us the name of a celebrity? And I remember Anna's.
Michael Smeknorsnik.
No, he goes, her grandfather goes, George C. Scott.
Oh,
we're like, okay, great. We're going to do George C. Scott comedy for the next 5 minutes. We're all 24, and I'm like, I think he was in Patton.
He was in Patton.
We were like, oh my God, I don't know how we're going to do this game. But that was what we did, you know. And I think about, and then we were talking about how many people who went on, I mean, so many, but we're like, wasn't so-and-so and so-and-so, like so many big people in comedy now, but we all did it. And it's like just that thing you kind of go through. And to your point, I'm like, you got to get up there and do it, you know, in order to, if you ever do it, and be willing to just be like real rough for a while or do those class shows and do those classes.
Exactly. And hopefully that you get like, oh, that was disastrous. And oh my God, this whole evening is an embarrassment. And I look out into the audience's faces and I see their pain. And I hope, instead of thinking, yeah, nailed it, man. Yeah, you did it. Yeah, awesome.
Yeah. But you just, I mean, it's that, it's so weird what we do. And like the fact that we're just like, okay, we're going to play for you now and just do this.
It is kind of weird. And like when you really think about someone going to watch an improv show or a theater or a musical or something, and it's just like these people congregating in a room, sitting in a chair, staring at you for an hour or
and
2 hours
improv,
and just like judging you.
With improv, you're like, we're going to show up. We have no idea what we're going to do. And you're going to pay money to watch us figure it out in front of you.
Uh-huh.
And so it just, it provides so much terror for the audience because they're just like, what am I in store for? And you're like, don't mess with me. Don't talk to me. Don't try to bring me up there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then there's also like when you have gone through it and you're on the other side of it, the last thing you want to watch is a bunch of like games.
Of course.
Or a bunch of stuff that you're like, I had to do this in class. I've had to watch, you know, and it's and I get how some of them are like audience friendly stuff, but you're like, oh God.
Yeah.
Because I'm such an elitist about improv. If I want to watch an improv show, I'm like, I just want to see people do scenes.
Exactly.
I don't want to see them do games.
That's what we thought we were going to go, but it was all games. Every game.
And that's a lot of where it is. And it's like, you know, and then there's just bad
habits. This game is called Freeze Tag.
Oh. Never. Oh, that's horrible. Yeah. Oh, that's the worst. And then you're just like, you know.
All valuable games, all good learning tools.
Yep.
But I don't want to go.
But don't make anybody pay to watch.
I don't want to sit in Morro Bay and pay $5
but
on top
anyway,
of a restaurant.
That you did it.
To go back to your original statement, Pat, which I think is so great, is that, you know, isn't it interesting? I mean, you know the Joan Rivers documentary.
Mm-hmm.
When you've both seen that, yes?
I'm pretty sure I did, but it.
Shame on you.
I mean, very, very telling.
Very telling.
That's very telling. You haven't seen it. She has this moment where she really melts down because somebody critiqued her as an actress. And she goes, you can say anything about me. You can say I'm unfunny. I'm ugly. I'm old. I don't matter, but don't insult me as an actress. And you're like, Joan Rivers? Like, when were you an actress? But
she was in The Muppet. The Muppet. Take Manhattan,
I know, exactly. She was in a TV movie playing herself.
Good point.
With her daughter also playing
good
herself.
Good point.
But you're like, Joan Rivers was amazing and a legend, but actress was not, no. would not be the word I would use.
Not me.
And not that I ever thought she was a bad actress. I just never thought she was ever not Joan Rivers.
Yeah.
But isn't it funny how like that's the thing? And part of me totally understands that when mm-hmm. I'm just like, you can say I'm not funny. You can say I'm boring. But if you're like, he's a bad actor, it just, yeah, it hits on some weird yeah. primal thing where I'm like, I you know, it's like, you don't ever, you know, consider that. But yeah, it's tricky.
The merging of the two, the finding the path that gets you there, that I think is a very valuable path to take as a performer, entertainer, actor.
Yeah.
The person that makes me think the most about this is Bill Murray, because Bill Murray started off at Second City and he did the National Lampoon Radio Hour and he bip-de-bip and did stage Saturday Night Live and did these goofy comedy movies that were basically Bill Murray being that Bill that we love. And then he look what he's grown into
right.
as an actor.
Right.
Oh, yeah. He's stunning.
Yeah,
Oscar-nominated actor
yeah.
in Rushmore or the
Lost in Translation.
Yeah. As an actor, just a guy holding yeah. a character. The depth of the character, not just the goofy Bill Murray that
right.
we all love.
Yeah.
But don't you think at a certain point you grow out of that goof and like you get tired of it? Like, I mean,
Rip Taylor kind of finally got tired of his.
As did all of us of him. Oh my God, we should have Sam come on here and tell Sam Pancake tell his crazy Rip Taylor story. Anyway,
but they
Google
grow out
Sam.
Of it.
It's online somewhere. You can
Google
find it.
Google
Sam
it. You'll find it.
Rip Taylor, you'll find it.
Rip Taylor.
Find it yourself
Sam
as
Pancake.
A sidebar. No, I just think for me, like, in, I mean, I love improv, and I feel like I'll do it forever because I'm just a total nerd about it. I'm a total geek about that. But sketch comedy, I'm kind of done. Like, and at a certain point, you get where you're like, I don't know how many more wigs and wacky catchphrases and. You know, you get to a point where you're like, it's great when you're in your 20s and you do it or your 30s. I don't even want to put an age on it because like it's not even about that. Because there's some people that find it later in life and they love it. But
yeah.
you kind of cycle through it. I did. And I think a lot of people kind of feel that. And you're like, you prove, you know, and once you've been on Saturday Night Live for that long and you become a legend for that. And then you get these big movies where you're the lead and it's all around how goofy you are. Don't you want to be like, I mean, Will Ferrell has done it with like that great movie where it's not called Something's Gotta Give, but it's about all his law. He was the alcoholic and he's like living on his lawn. He's amazing in this movie. And whatever the name of it is eludes me.
I remember
nothing in here. We're in debt. Anyway. But you know, like I think at a certain point you're like, I don't want to do this anymore, and I want to say something. I want to make a point.
You know who was a good example of that too, and is Judith Light. And I was just talking to someone yesterday about it.
Yeah,
where she was like, I'm gonna do this mom sitcom thing for a while,
yep.
and then it was like, what happened to Judith Light? And then she did Wit on Broadway, and everyone was like, oh, okay, Judith Light. And then everyone was like, excuse me. And now look at her.
Wrong.
Like everything she does, you're like genius.
Yeah.
Genius.
Right.
And bring it back to transparency.
And
as well.
Also, like taking her time and not freaking out about how she's perceived, and not trying because it was she was in that category of. And I was talking this the other day about like those so many of those women that were the sitcom moms in the 80s, and they went on to do the Lifetime movies.
Yeah.
But they also were really good actors. Like they all were trained actors. And like Ed O'Neill from Married with Children was a Shakespearean trained actor. And like you know. You don't know what you're gonna get in the shuffle of things, and you're lucky when you get a job that runs forever. But like,
or your friend Stephanie Courtney, who is the progressive lady, who when you see her do guest spots on other TV shows, you're like, this genius, right?
Oh, and she's one of the best improvisers I've ever seen in my life.
And she's
truly
just
one of the
you know, and the
ever.
World only knows her as that woman,
right.
doesn't know the depth of her
right. And
abilities.
They will, and they will. They will, because Stephanie is also, you know, she's all about, she's even says, like, I'm going to be the next Doris Roberts. Like, she's like, I want to work. And you're like, we have a life in doing this. And I think you get really wrapped up in thinking, oh, you're either going to, quote unquote, make it at a certain point.
Oh,
or,
gosh,
you know, and you're like, no, we all are like kind of stumbling and doing one thing to the next. And, you know, it is inspiring, though, to see someone change perception. you know.
I think there's it's two kind of people, because there are a lot of people that are just kind of devoted to the thing, and we're doing the jobs we can to get by in the business, and because we love doing it, love whatever we're doing. And then there are people like, screw this, man. I can't do it anymore. I got to leave. I can't. So, you know, I think that there. Some people come here fully expecting to be a star, mm-hmm. and they get slapped down and they go, oh, geez, it's not what I thought it
right,
should be.
Right, right. I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting.
It's going to happen, Tom.
Let me tell you how it is.
I'm still waiting.
Being a star.
That's what this show's
about?
This show's
about being a star.
I thought so.
I did a show that made fun of Judith Light, actually, because of what her, you know, back when she was doing the sitcom. Who's the Boss?
Who's the Boss?
Yeah, the boss. I love that.
Yeah.
And but I also respect people that are like, fuck this and I'm getting out of this. I respect that as well. Because
totally.
That takes a lot of courage.
Absolutely.
To be like, you know what, this isn't for me, because it's not for everybody. And it has nothing to do with talent. It's about, there's that you've got to have this certain brand of mental illness.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. That we have, that we go, okay, I'm just going to keep, you know, throwing quarters in the well. And, you know, eventually it's going to,
it's going to happen.
Yeah, plus is the thing, too. I've had friends of mine from Chicago, were here 10, 15 years, and they said, screw it, man, I'm going back to Chicago. Working awards, getting this job and that. Even their commercial life is picking up, so it can work.
Yeah. And there's a lot of friends, especially as you stay here in LA longer and longer, that I have been in classes with or met through whatever, and you just see them be like, you know what, I'm done. And then they go in, but they were some of the most talented people.
There's no correlation.
And I was like, oh my God, you were like my favorite person to watch.
And now you're leaving?
Gone. I say that a lot. I'm like, oh my God.
But follow your bliss. And if it is follow not making you happy and not feeding you, it's only gonna kill you. And so like,
Brett did that. My wife, Brett Paisel, did that. She stopped acting and started writing. I mean, it helped. Then Jill asked her if she wanted to be on the show.
She's a phenomenal actor.
And that's what I'm saying. It kind of killed me. I said, honey, you're not stopping acting. We need people like you.
And she's fantastic on Transparent. But also, there's got to be some space, too, about, because even with me, like I've gotten a writing job, and I have, I've been sort of straddling and going different things. It's kind of nice to take the pressure off of just calling yourself an actor and waiting for every job to come in to go, I'm also doing this and I'm also doing this. And actually the acting jobs come in a lot easier that way, because you're not muscling it. You're not killing yourself to try to get the next thing. You're like, oh, it's just, it'll be what it is, and I have an audition, and okay, cool, and if I get it, that'd be great. If not, I hope it goes to somebody great, and move on. If you don't make it like, that's what I'm doing, this is my bread and butter, I walk in the room going, I need this in order to pay my light bill.
I wish people knew that.
It's really rough.
I get a lot, you're one of those Hollywood people. Like, you're out there in Hollywood, so you've got that crazy lifestyle. It's like, no, man, really, I'm just a middle-class guy trying to raise two kids in the company town, working for the company in the company town.
Right, exactly.
And there are more of us, I swear to God, there are thousands of us, and only just like a couple of hundred of those big people you see on TV all the time.
I know. All right, Tom, I want to, we're clipping along.
I want to hear your story.
I want to hear from you,
well,
Tom.
Well, I was like, do I come on here and rant about how I hate New York City or how I really hate RuPaul right now?
I love it.
I was like, do I want to do that, or do I want to tell a story about a sweater? And I'm like, you know what? I'll leave it up to Drew.
I love all of those things. Can you?
I might be able to hit all three.
Hit all three.
Number one, New York. I just
I love you
back.
I love you in New York, and I love how angry you are when you're there.
Live in New York?
No, thanks.
Who wants to live in the smoke?
I'm telling you, I get off the plane and I'm ready to sock someone in the face in every second. I mean, I grew up on Long Island. I was going to the city ever since I was a child. I spent a lot of fucking time there, and I'm already kind of an angry human being, and I get off that plane.
Oh, God, you're the most lovely person ever.
On the inside, I'm pretty angry.
I know, but that's why I love
you. On the outside, you might see something else. But I what really just broke my the camel's back on the first day that I was there was, for the flight getting there was a fucking shit show because JFK only had one runway out of four that was working
the day
I entered, because they were doing construction. I was like, New York and your construction, you've been working on those roads since I was a child in the 80s. Like, why are you still working on the fucking roads? Number
oh
one.
My God, I love it.
So we got there late, and then I was going to get a bagel. And of course, New York City is still one of those places where everything is fucking cash only where you want to eat. And I'm like, yeah. When did you, why is this still happening?
Yeah, I know.
You're a major metropolitan. You are the city. Get it together.
Yeah.
So I go to the grocery store across the street from the bagel shop. And it's not just like, oh, Al's Grocer. You know, it's fucking Food Town. Which also, like, why are you calling your grocery stores Food Town? Key Foods. Like, come on. Food Emporium? I don't want to eat food there. Anyway, so I go inside. I'm like, I'm going to get this fucking kombucha and I'll get cash back. And the lady was like, you can't get cash back unless you spend $10. And I audibly said, I fucking hate this place.
Did the lady think you meant New York?
Great thing about New York is they go, uh-huh, me too, and then
me
you move
too,
on.
I move on. Yeah. So it's just like a lot of that.
Yeah, it's
all
a lot of that.
Weekend.
But I know, because we were in there for almost a month doing Bright Colors and Bold Patterns, and when I was there, I get very beaten down by how real everyone is.
Ugh.
Because I don't need...
What does that mean?
I love how fake people are here. Like, I don't mind when I take, a Lyft or an Uber and we have a casual conversation, but, like, I don't need attitude. Like,
yes.
Cab drivers in New York have, like, major fucking attitude all the time. And you're like, you know what? Relax.
Relax.
I'm paying you to take me from here to here. We're not going to be best friends. You know, I like real friends. I like real people in my life that are going to tell me the truth, obviously, around me. But in just an average interaction, I don't need attitude all the time. Mm-hmm. It's a lot coming at you. And then it sort of melted me down a little bit. And it's like the wind is so punishing and it's free. You know, it's like in the winter, it's like freezing. And you're like, and you go somewhere and you walk into like a coffee shop and I'm like, I'm just naturally going to walk up and go, hi, how are you? And they stare at you and they're like, what do you want?
Yes.
And you're just like.
And also every time you go, even just to order the coffee, they're like, okay, that's fine. They like are completely disinterested. I'm like, can you at least try to do a good job? And then you get your coffee or whatever and it's wrong. 90% of the time I order something in New York and it's fucking wrong. Like, do your fucking job.
Be a city, New York.
I love you, but I hate you at the same time.
I know. I mean, I love New York and I love it. I've never lived there though. And I always go and visit.
I love our soundtrack.
I love this woman who joined us.
I gotta change the channel.
She's really great.
She's lovely.
She's really great. She's a little drunk and she's definitely bleeding.
We gotta figure that out.
So next topic.
Next topic is RuPaul. I'm so fucking disappointed in this season's Drag Race.
Yeah.
And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that I'm afraid RuPaul has seen the light of money. And I think she's just making money decisions, as opposed to when that show first started, it was like, what is this magic that's happening? And now all of the queens are thinking about the money that they're going to make, and they're just too aware of who they are. And I'm watching the show and I'm just like, you are just trying to create catchphrases. You're trying to be funny, but you're not. You're trying to create drama, but it's not really there.
I'm
seeing through it.
I would blame the culture on that more than RuPaul, because I think it's definitely, you have queens on there now who grew up watching RuPaul's Drag Race.
Right.
Is that just the inevitability of the show?
It's inevitability of success. And when things get popular, they get ruined. I mean, people ruin everything, you know? And it's like a thing where it's like I watch it now every week because Michael Lucid and I do these recaps
which
every week.
Which are genius.
And we sit there and we're just like, I'm dying for any of them to be more interesting.
Yes.
I want to like them. And they're just really basic and just...
Very, it's like the high school version of drag queens
they're
this
playing
season,
at,
except
they're,
for like two of them.
They're playing at the drama. They're
yes.
playing at being a drag queen.
Yes.
It's not coming from any honest place of like,
no.
I have this in me and I have to get
have
this
to get
out.
It. Yes.
Instead, it's like, I'll get famous and I'll get a, you know. And it also sucks for those drag queens who are so talented.
And who
are so
amazing, that?
Who haven't done the show, who can't get booked on things because they were not on Drag Race. And that's something
you
that
probably
I think
do have
is,
a good point. It's, I mean, if I was in RuPaul's position, I saw money in my eyes as well, I I'd be like, I'm going to snatch all that money and them trophies. Like, I understand why she did it, but I'm like, oh no, that the thing that I love for so many years is starting to deteriorate a little bit. And I'm like, no, don't disappear the one thing.
I think it's a lot. I mean, yeah, because I feel like also like, I see it in RuPaul, you know, she just seems incredibly disappointed in who the talent that's coming at her.
And she looks like, so disappointed.
Wait, I thought you were going to do better than this. Mm. So I kind of am like, and she's kind of like sassy with them and kind of been like, I mean, she's kind of turned like Miranda Priestly with them.
Yeah.
Going, oh, groundbreaking. And I love it. I'm like, yeah, more of that.
That's what I want to see more of.
Because, you know, it was like, yes, at the beginning, it was all about like, you know, holding up these people and making it, you know, lovely. But I just feel like it's like with anything, it's like with it's very similar to Saturday Night Live. It's like it's a show that like is a great launching pad for so many people. But once it becomes the thing,
yeah,
you know, Saturday Night Live started, it was like 7 cast members and it was a show that was like so experimental. They didn't know they were going to change the world and change the face of comedy. And they did in the biggest way.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, it's at that point. And I think they season 10 needs to be a complete shakeup.
Yeah, I agree.
I think they need to do – I want them to bring on like legends who have never been on Drag Race, who are like legendary drag queens, and put them all in there together. And
wouldn't
be like,
that be
let's
fun?
Learn about these
– And I think something. That's why I loved when they did All Stars over the summer. It was my favorite out of all of them because they were just the realest of the queens.
Yeah. For
and it
sure.
was just really unbelievable to see that. And that's the kind of stuff where Rue looks like, oh, I'm enjoying myself because these women are impressing me.
Because they are the realest of the queens.
The realest of the queens.
The realest. And then finally, your sweater story.
My sweater story. So when I was a really young kid for Christmas, most children who were normal were like, I want a basketball or I want Legos or I want like, you know, I want this really cool, I don't know, sports game or like Game Boy. And I said to my mother, I was like, I really want a V-neck sweater.
A what?
Oh my God.
And I was like, I found it in the JCPenney catalog and I circled it. And I was like, this one right here. My mom says to me, she goes, you're going to grow out of that sweater, and that sweater costs $50, and you're one of 6 children. Really figure that choice out, Tom. And I said, my Christmas will be ruined if you don't give me this sweater. And when we wrote our Christmas list, it just said V-neck sweater. That's
oh
it.
Oh my God.
And I put numbers down the side and just at the top, V-neck sweater, everything else went away. I was like, this is all I want. So it's Christmas morning and I'm opening up my presents and I'm not getting the sweater. And at the end of, I thought my presents were over and my mom goes, what's wrong, Tom? And I'm like, I didn't get what I wanted. And my mom and dad are like, well, why don't you open that box behind you? And I open it up and there's this cream V-neck sweater with Hunter green and maroon, like
nice.
Edging.
Yes.
And I was like, this is all I wanted. So I put it on and I'm like, I felt like I was the sexiest fifth grader there ever was. And I walk into my grandma's house and my grandma always gave us wine and seltzer for Christmas.
Wine?
Wine and seltzer. Yeah.
Okay.
Because it was an Italian, my Italian grandmother was like, here, drink this wine. I'm like, what?
It's a wine spritzer.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And one time I had too many and I got a terrible headache and I didn't understand what happened.
No.
So we were at the dinner table and I'm like, just like looking at everyone, hoping they'd be looking at me in my V-neck sweater, just like obsessed with myself.
Oh my God.
And I'm drinking this wine and seltzer and the red wine spilt
the
white sweater. And I look to my mother and she just goes, that's what you get.
Merry Christmas, son.
Oh my God. Now, did you get the stains out?
Nope.
You had seltzer.
Nope. I wore that. Nope. Because it ruined the sweater.
Oh.
I wore
my
it for
God.
Like 3 hours.
No.
And I was pretty sad.
Merry
but I also
Christmas.
Realized in that moment I was pretty gay.
Yes. And I love that you were like Dawn Davenport with your cha-cha heels, like, you know, in Female Trouble. So, you know, have you seen Female Trouble?
No,
I've seen
Tom
Female
Trouble.
Tom
DeTrenis. Yeah, of course.
Shame on you.
I'm in trouble.
Tom,
I'm in Female Trouble right now.
Okay, so you are pretty gay, but bad. I hate that thing about
take your gay card away.
But
take it away.
But
take
the
it
Joan
away.
Rivers documentary and Female Trouble, these are two essential.
Please.
I'm pretty sure I saw the Joan Rivers one, but I just don't remember.
Pretty
well,
sure.
You must watch
well,
Female
Well, I'm pretty
Trouble.
Sure you're almost gay.
Well, thank you, Pat. I
really do.
It.
I was going to say this awful thing. I don't know why sometimes I say it, but I hate when people say, I'm going to take your gay card away. It's like, relax. There's
is,
no such thing. And
no.
we're all unicorns. We're all
not all of us like Judy Garland.
And there's a lot of those kind of movies that I still have yet to see because I was much more a theater nerd than a film nerd when I was growing up. So like, I just immersed myself in theater faggotry than I did with like actresses of film and TV.
Right. Well, but the biggest actress of film and TV that you need to know at Drew Drogi's school of everything is Divine.
Oh, yes.
And Divine in Female Trouble is so brilliant. Sublime and brilliant. And it's, okay. Oh my God, you would love it. You would love
all right,
it.
I'm going to have to.
Anybody listening, if you haven't seen Female Trouble, like, oh my good Lord. But you will understand because the whole movie actually hinges on. Divine starts when she's in high school. Dawn Davenport's in high school, and all she wants is cha-cha heels for Christmas. and there's this whole thing where her parents was like, "Nice girls don't wear cha-cha heels," and Dawn Davenport's not a nice girl, yeah. And it sends her into a life of crime and debauchery. Uh-huh. That is the action. Not getting the cha-cha heels causes her to ruin Christmas, storm out.
See,
that.
Sounds familiar?
That's the same thing.
That's the same thing. I mean, basically, you've lived it and you understand it.
Thank you.
But, I love that you got this. I mean, I love that you, oh my God.
Like a V-neck sweater so specifically. Like, I clearly saw a man on the street who I thought was very attractive at a young age, like Ring of Keys style.
Yeah, sure,
and was
sure,
like,
sure.
Look at that sexy dude. Or like, I feel something in my body for this man wearing mm-hmm. this V-neck mm-hmm. sweater.
What's
I need
happening to me?
I need to feel the same. Yeah, so it was pretty. I just also love my mother was just like, oh, well, deal with
yeah,
the kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Life lessons.
That's what you get.
That's yeah. so nuts.
Tried to warn you.
Yes, oh, she exactly. sure did.
She sure did.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. And we're out of time. How about that? Merry Christmas and we're out of time.
Merry Christmas. We're out
of
time.
Oh, my God. This has been wonderful. I could talk to you guys forever. This is,
I know.
Thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having
us. It feels like an extension of that show we did called Die, Mommy, Die.
Which is currently closed and you can't watch it.
Coming to New York soon.
Coming to New York. How many people thought we were going to New York?
Too many.
I don't know.
Too many.
I don't know.
And lots of, when is this thing going to New York? And we're like, well, years ago.
Years ago.
Yeah, years ago. It's already happened in New York when Charles Bush was in it.
So there you go.
Anyway, I'm going to thank my guests, Pat Town and Tom DeTrennis. Thank you so much.
Thank you, darling.
Thank you, Drew.
Good to see you.
This has been another episode of Drew Drogi's Minor Revelations. I can't say revelations, apparently. That's my revelation, Minor Revelations. Have a week.
Bye.